This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Thank you for logging back on, Junkions, to another cutting-edge episode of Junk Food Cinema brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com.
.com.
.com.
Dot Identity Matrices. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is sadistic, that is intelligent, and that is dangerous. And it is, of course, hosted by myself, Brian Salisbury, and my co-host. He's a novelist, he's a screenwriter, he is Cargill 3.0, and Lieutenant of Megaforce, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
6.7, baby.
6.7. Well, you know, let's not be too proud of ourselves. I mean, I'd say like more like 5.5. I forgot what we were doing. If you would like to hear more of what we're doing, you can always find our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show, if it makes you want to transcend to virtual and real planes of being, you can always support us financially on Patreon.com. Patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. Please donate to patreon.com. It's actually not a donation because for as little as
I feel like we need to rethink the whole, you know, donation model. I don't even know if they fully call it donations anymore.
No, nobody calls it donations except me just now, because it is in fact a pledge. And
you're getting content.
And for as little as a dollar an episode, you get access to bonus content that no one else gets to hear. And if you decide to pledge at the $5 level or higher, you get all that content plus an entire bonus episode every month called The Deep Dish that I'm very excited about. We're going to be doing another one here this week. And yeah, super awesome. Definitely a good time to become a patron. Patreon.com/junkfoodcinema.
.com.
Continuing our series, So Majestic, So Manly, So Mighty That King Kong Ain't Got Shit On It, my man, it's the Denzel Washington.
Okay.
Forgiveness is between them and God. It's my job to arrange the meeting.
Okay.
So you are what you are in this world. That's either one of two things. Either you're somebody.
I'm the man up in this piece.
Or you're nobody.
I run shit here. You just live here.
Okay.
King Kong ain't got shit on me.
And this week.
Oh, this week.
This week we get into just a little side note. A friend of the show and host of one of our sister podcasts, 80s All Over, Mr. Scott Weinberg. I was giving him a lift home last night. He was like, so what are you guys covering this week? And he was trying to figure it out. And I told him, and, he had a message for,
this is coming straight off the wire, guys, from Scott Weinberg of 80s All Over. Who is here in digital form, which is so appropriate given the movie we're talking about.
Yeah, he was like, hey, I got something for you. You could tell all the listeners out there in listener land to challenge you to name one film that Brett Leonard made that is good. And I'm like, Virtuosity. And he goes, no. And proceeds to name off every other film in Brett Leonard's filmography to prove that Virtuosity may be the only good film he's ever made.
I like that you said every other film as if that would take you a long time to list. It would not. It is not a chore that takes you a lengthy amount of time.
Well, he was just rattling it off like he had an axe to grind. Like, it's one thing to have a director that you don't like that's like, oh, hey, this guy made a couple of bad films.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon. But to be able to rattle off the entire filmography of some dude like he fucked your high school girlfriend, it was a little brutal.
I have a theory about Brett Leonard that I'm going to get into later that might make Scott hate him even more. So we will have to check in.
Did in fact fuck his high school girlfriend?
No. Which, well, how odd would it be if that was my theory? Like, I think Brett Leonard may have fucked Scott Weinberg's high school girlfriend without having any information that you just gave me. Just parallel theories. I love it. No, this is one of those situations where, you know, we have another slogan around here, Cargill. It's not a good movie, but it's a great movie.
Yes.
And I feel like that is a title we should bestow upon a movie like Virtuosity.
Paramount Pictures invites you to meet the future's most dangerous killers.
Sid 6.7 got himself out of the computer. Recognize him.
One's digital.
Kill my wife, my daughter.
The other's the law.
Where's my gun?
Hey, Parker! This one's for you! On your knees! Shut up! Here we go.
Sid's a copycat.
He's recreating mass murders. 6.7 is intent on improving the original.
Say thank you.
This is not a game, but Sid is still from the game.
He only enjoys playing against his favorite opponent, and that's me.
That's reality for you.
Oh, absolutely. Virtuosity is a movie that was bugfuck nuts when it came out, but becomes even more enjoyably more so with cinema history. Like, when you look back at this film that is now over 20 years old, and you see two of the most machismo-driven powerhouse actors of what would be the next 20 years going head-to-head along with a bunch of great character actors, some crazy action sequences, and then some really just crazy zany shit that doesn't totally make sense. I dug this when it came out, and I was like, this is junky as hell, but I fucking love it.
I feel like there is a four quadrant graph that you could do with most junk food cinema movies. And in one, like, basically on the axis, you have, like, quality of the movie, and then the other axis is how much we love it. This is in the lower right quadrant, where it is a movie that is not of high quality, but I'll be damned if I don't fucking love this movie.
Well, it's, the thing is it's one of those movies that is always enjoyable.
Correct.
It never gets boring. You're never sitting there waiting for a certain sequence to end. If it's not actually being cool and fun and fast paced, it is being fucking bonkers.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm in. I'm totally into this scene where this 90s pinup girl, virtual girl, is seducing a guy off screen while a chess game happening around her.
Thank you. That is
a giant fucking chess game.
You have a character who wants so badly to transubstantiate a girl from a video game so he can fuck her. And the weirdest part about that is none of that. It's the fact that she exists in a chess game.
Yeah.
What? Why chess? Why is that the game that she lives in? It is so... That is what I love about this movie, is just when you think you have taken in with your eyes the weirdest part of a scene, they will introduce another element, just wham, out of left field, and all of a sudden, the bonkersness is elevated to 11. And this is a movie of big fucking swings. I mean, massive goddamn swings. And it occupies a special place in my heart of movies that mortgage everything, including their staying power and reputation, on a predictive future that they get so wrong.
And yet right at the same time.
Right in some places, very, very wrong in other places.
Well, yeah. Well, no. See, the thing is, first of all, you're dead wrong about a statement you just made.
I doubt it.
That movie doesn't happen in the future. How long ago in this timeline was this guy, did Denzel Washington lose his family?
So you're saying that this movie is depicting the present of 1995?
That is what is fucked up. It is not exactly the present. It's pretty close. Like, when they say in the near future, like, according to the timeline of this movie takes place in like 97, 98.
So it's still predicting a future. And in fact, even more bonkers, it's predicting a future 2 years from when it was made.
The movie came out in 95 and the death of his family happened in 94. Like, this is, like, they don't actually give us a specific amount of time, but we know it wasn't that fucking long ago. But whatever it is, this ramp up of technology happens pretty much over fucking night.
Objection. Your Honor, I would like to submit that what you just said does not make me wrong. In fact, makes me more right and this movie more fucking crazy. And that is the beautiful thing about virtuosity.
Dude, this movie's fucking bonkers.
So let's talk. You hit on it a second ago, but let's talk about the cast of this movie. Because we have Denzel, obviously.
Yeah.
We also have, in the year that broke him to American audiences, Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Which means that in this movie, this giant cat and mouse playground of insanity is occupied by not one, but two Best Actor Oscar winners.
Yes.
And that's the fucking tip of
back
the casting.
Back to back Oscar winners.
Back to back. And it is fucking crazy. And on top of that, we have not one, but two of my favorite William character actors in Will Forsythe,
yeah,
and William Fichtner.
Yes.
In the same movie.
In the same fucking movie.
And that's if you had not Will Smith, haha, woo, but William Smith from all of those biker movies that I love, this would have, I think, all three of my favorite character actor Wills in it. It would be a battle of Wills. Oh my God, it would be a battle of Wills. Just saying. It also has Kevin J. O'Connor, who you would recognize from the Mummy movies and Deep Rising, and hold the fucking phone, Louise Fletcher, Nurse Ratched, is in this goddamn movie too?
Dude.
What is going on?
Oh, no, it gets even weirder than that, because Costas Mandalore shows up.
Costas Mandalore, who is not, in fact, Harry Connick Jr. I watched this movie twice before I realized that was not Harry Connick Jr.
That is not Harry Connick Jr. And, of course, there's this very small cameo by Tracy Lords.
Tracy Lords?
As in former underage porn star turned B-movie queen Tracy Lords.
Sidebar. Just real, real quick sidebar. Given what's going on in our current political landscape, how fitting is it that the next Deep Throat could have actually been in a movie called Deep Throat?
That is very true.
That just having Tracy Lords in this movie just kind of made me think about that. Also in this movie,
Michael Buffer announcing for Ultimate Fighting before Ultimate Fighting was really a thing, and one of the Ultimate Fighters is Ken Shamrock.
Let's get ready to sell out! I'm so glad you mentioned Ken Shamrock, because I thought I was going to have to be the one to bring up Ken Shamrock in this movie as we move toward St. Patrick's Day. Really, the reason we chose to cover this movie this week,
because it's going to our junk food pairing going to be a Ken Shamrock shake.
Oh my God. You know why they never did that? Because the promos would have been terrible, because that guy, I used to, you know, when I was a little fat kid wrestling fan, I was in the Attitude Era right about the time that Ken Shamrock came over from UFC, and I knew nothing about Ultimate Fighting whatsoever. I did know that Ken Shamrock was a scary motherfucker when he came over to the WWF, because he was not an on-the-mic personality. He was a guy that would just come out there with rage and intensity, and the ever-present threat that he would break all of your legs. And he wore those gloves that, even at the time knowing nothing about UFC, I still thought were pretty damn cool. But fuck yeah, Ken Shamrock in this movie, Michael Buffer in this movie, Kelly Lynch in this movie, and the first on-screen appearance of Kelly Cuoco in this fucking movie. Like, what? It's insane how much both star power and character actor power and insane cameo power is in this movie.
Is in this batshit crazy sci-fi actioner that makes hackers look prophetic.
That looks like if the show Reboot could fart. That's basically the graphics interface we're working with in this movie.
There are some CG elements in this movie.
End of sentence.
There are some CG elements in this movie.
And you know what? If you ended your sentence there was a debate that could happen, because
you know what I find particularly nostalgic and what tickles me on the inside is there's a sequence in here in a dance club where they really kind of lay heavy on the digital rainbow effects, which were, you know, like you'll look at it and some of you might see it as kind of a weird psychedelic predator vision. And the thing was, is that shit was everywhere on early computers in the 90s. Like, it was a screensaver that you fucking bought. Like,
not only that, but a lot
there were mods that would have your computer do that, because holy shit, showing all these colors was something computers couldn't do up until that point. And so then it was amazing.
They introduced video cameras that was an in-camera effect. You could just push a button on your goddamn home video camera and it's like, ooh, everything looks like this, which is what I thought was going on, is that she just pushed one of the buttons on that camcorder and it's like, oh, now it looks like this. Oh, wait, now it's sepia tone. Oh, it's black and white, except for a few red elements. Like, all of the go-to basic mid-90s in-camera video camera effects, and that's touted as something to be marveled at in this film. Fuck me! We haven't even talked about the plot of this fucking movie.
Okay, so before we talk about the plot of this fucking movie, we've talked about how bonkers it is. Is it more bonkers than Ricochet?
No!
That's kind of fucking with you, isn't it?
It is. Like, that is a moment of discovery for me, what I just said.
Yeah.
It's not, because it sets up a world that's fucking bonkers and then plays within those rules. Ricochet
almost plays within those rules.
Almost plays. Ricochet ain't afraid to throw shit at you that has nothing. Like, Ricochet's like, oh, we're a standard thriller. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Oh, except for this and this and this and this. It almost like ambushes you with the crazy. This movie has the good sense to announce from frame one that it is, in fact, a bonkers world. I mean, when Denzel Washington and Costas Mandalore get out of the subway train and they're both wearing, like, leather uniforms and everyone around them is wearing gray, which is already just visually very odd. And then on top of that, it is clear that every other person in that scene is an NPC from an MMORPG.
Yeah, and this scene in particular, what I find fascinating is this scene was totally ripped off for The Matrix.
1,000%.
Like, this, when you watch this scene, you're like, 1,000%. Oh, God, this is where they borrowed from, and nobody really noticed in 99 because, like, 12 of us remembered Virtuosity.
And that is how they got away with it. But every other character in this scene is like, hello. Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. And you realize that they really are NPCs. They're characters that can't give you any more information because they can only say three things and walk a predetermined path.
And to its credit, that scene really does a great job of telling you exactly what's going on without any exposition whatsoever. Like, there's nobody explains what's going on, but you as an audience member are deep in it. Like, it was well constructed. You get, oh, this is not the real world, this is the digital world.
Yeah.
And it's really neat how it works, especially for 1995, where that was not, you know, the Matrix was still 4 years away. Like, this was not something that people would have their brains, people hadn't had their brains melted by that yet, and then be used to it and be expecting it.
Yeah. And it's weird to say that this movie hits the ground running when we pull back and realize that our characters in our virtual reality simulation, and they are literally suspended above the air and cannot touch the ground, even when they're running, which is one of the sillier elements of this movie, is when you see a character in this virtual simulation, they have to mime the act of running, but they're suspended in the air, so they just look helpless and weird. And we pull back to realize that this simulation where two cops are tracking down a serial killer named Sid, played by Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe, by the way, was going to join us on this episode, but unfortunately, there was a scheduling conflict with his support group for his eating disorder, because he is, in fact, gargling scenery in this fucking movie. Like, we've talked about people chewing scenery in movies before. Like, Russell Crowe is doing it so much that he's even shitting it out, like, in the middle of the movie. Like, there is so much scenery chewing going on from Russell Crowe, and it is the most glorious thing I get tired of Russell Crowe that doesn't do this. Like, I want every Russell Crowe to do this. When Russell Crowe isn't like this, to me it's like when they try to cast Nicolas Cage as a regular guy. It's like, that's not what I want. Why are you caging the beast? Let it out. I want to see it. That's what I bought a ticket for. And sure enough, he is just...
You would rather Beast the Cage?
I would rather Beast the Cage than Cage the Beast. That is absolutely true. It needs to be on a fucking t-shirt. Beast the Cage, don't cage the Beast. And don't cage Russell Crowe either, because as it turns out, watching him in this movie, he might be the greatest Joker we've ever had. We just didn't know he was the fucking Joker. Because through this whole movie, he is just delighting and making one-liners and weird voices and loving killing. He is, in fact, a composite of hundreds of different serial killers and murderers throughout time, one of which happens to be a man named Grimes, who is a political terrorist who killed Denzel's family. Because when we pull back and we realize it's a simulation, we also realize that the two cops in the simulation are, in fact, convicts, one of which being Denzel Washington with predator dreads, which I don't know why he never did that again, because that was a pretty badass look.
And a beard.
Yeah.
Like, that look is like, holy shit, that is a badass Denzel.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
The fact that he cleans up later in the film is a disappointment, because it's like, you should have kept that look the whole fucking movie, Denzel.
Yeah, and it's weird when you think about the fact that they originally wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger as Parker Barnes, but he cost too much. And then they originally cast Michael Douglas as Parker Barnes in 95.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, but when you see this, I don't know. It's one of those weird situations where, much like Ricochet, it made me realize that there is no role and there is no film that you cannot put Denzel Washington in and it will be immediately elevated by his presence. Well, that guy is fucking bulletproof when it comes to picking projects. Like, even a movie like this, which definitely did not do well at the box office and was not critically liked, he comes out of this smelling like a goddamn rose.
Yeah.
Because he's Denzel. Because
he's Denzel, and he brings all the Denzel, and he's one of those guys who, like Michael Caine, just when you hire him, you get him.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't matter how big or small. Okay.
Okay. So
you're going to get it. And this is a movie that, yeah, he elevates this. Russell Crowe elevates this. Because what Russell Crowe brings is Sid 6.7 is really kind of a fucked up villain.
Yeah.
In concept, he's a fucked up villain. And I think this is what didn't work at the time, was this is a time when people wanted very serious villains. They wanted villains that made sense, and this is a villain that really doesn't make much sense.
No, because, well, for the first few viewings, I totally agreed with you, and then this most recent viewing, there was something about it that connected it to another bad movie I love that actually grounded it a little for me, because what ends up happening is Sid 6.7 in the simulation manages to overstimulate the brain of Costas Mandalore and kill him in the real world. And it really makes him want to kill for real instead of just being a simulation. And there is a developer, a really, you know, weaselly little guy who, prior to this movie, I only recognized in one other film where he has a romantic entanglement with Bruce Willis in a movie that really sets back, like, homosexual depictions in cinema about 10 years, if you've ever seen The Jackal. That's really the only other movie I've ever recognized him from. But he plays this developer who is hellbent on the idea of bringing Sid into the real world, and he happens to work with a guy who is played by Kevin J. O'Connor, who has developed nanobot technology that will potentially let him manifest a virtual being in the real world via a fucking cocoon. Like, it's like the set that they use to actually create Sid 6.7 looks like something left over from the Super Mario Brothers movie. It's this weird, like, biotech. It's really slimy. It's very odd, but he tricks Kevin J. O'Connor into thinking he's going to bring Sheila from Sexy Chess into the real world, and instead it is in fact 6.7's crystal paperweight identity matrix that he uses to... Okay, yeah, no, I can understand now why it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but what does make sense to me is actually using nanorobots to create, like, flesh. Basically, he's not a person. He's a collection of nanorobots that are simulating material. And it reminded me actually of Jason X and how we got Uber Jason. So the technology that brings Sid 6.7 into the real world is not terribly dissimilar from the technology that gave us Uber Jason. So,
well, but my what what I'm saying when he doesn't make sense is he doesn't have a clear motivation other than to kill. Like, there is no methodology to the way he's going about it, which is explained away by it's all of these alternate personalities like wrestling around in his brain because somehow we've mapped dead killers and put them into the computer somehow.
Including Hitler. We found a way to map Hitler and Mussolini and...
These people who even in this world have been dead 20, 30 years. It's like, yeah, all right, sure. So he ends up just like trying to kill and trying to make people suffer. And the neat thing about him is that he really wants attention. Like, that's the one thing that's really kind of zeroed in. But aside from that, he really is presented as this genius murderer, serial killer, spree killer that, in fact, is a child and is childlike and is just kind of playing around and has no idea what the outside world is really like. So it's, there's not a lot of logic that puts all of it together into a clear cut killer that could actually be figured out. Mm. Like, that's the thing is like they're profiling him and it's like, how do you profile randomness? Like, it's really like when he, when
I don't know, has anyone ever tried to profile this show? I feel like you'd have your answer to that question.
Yeah, it's it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, which is fine because it's that's the thing is it's fun. It's a computer program going nuts in 1995, so bug it. But yeah, it's, I think as a villain, he just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and that didn't quite work for that era because at this era, I mean, we were. In the 95, we were in the throes of the psycho killer. Like, we just, it was, it was so many movies where, you know, I mean, a year later we get something like Copycat, you know, where these were big hit movies where, you know, there was some serial killer and cops got to chase him down. We had a whole series of these for a long time because it was a very popular trope. And so here you have the science fiction version of it in an era where science fiction was not cool and not supported, and you get this bonkers as fuck movie.
See, and I feel like Copycat is what this movie, which, by the way, came out the same year as Virtuosity, is what Sid 6.7 should have been. I feel like there is an idea that they touch upon, they play with briefly, and then completely abandon, where he is committing crimes that are modeled after famous series. He only does it once.
Yeah, I feel that there's a lot of that in this movie, actually, and I think that's worthy of being explored. It's what, I mean, first of all, I love the movie for what it is, but yeah, there is almost a much better movie lurking here, and one of them is exactly what you were talking about, in which, why didn't we see other copycats of famous, you know, murders, of famous murder scenes? Why did we only really see that once?
Yeah, he kills an entire family just to get wardrobe, and he puts Death to Pigs on the wall, which is the LaBianca murders, the Manson clan, but we don't see that again. And I'm not saying that I like want him I don't want a scene where he's like strangling young men in a crawl space a la Gacy or anything like that, but it would make more sense that these other personalities are coming to the surface, and instead it's this one political assassin who, this bomber, because of, they keep saying it's because Denzel brings that one to the surface, and I'm like, yeah, but you had something more interesting you definitely could have played with. And I know this movie was, there may be an entire cutting room floor full of the movie that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because I did see in my research that they actually brought in an editor kind of at the 11th hour when the first test screening didn't go well. He actually gets a special thanks in the credits. So it's like, thanks for saving our movie. But I feel like there might be reels and reels and reels of exactly what we wanted to see. And I have
There's one scene with voiceover that gives exposition that I feel is really not good. Like, I hate the exposition. Like, okay. I just hate
okay.
it. Okay. Well, no, it's, I mean, here's the thing. Let's give the basic rundown. So Denzel Washington is a former cop who murdered some people, and we're going to slowly get the reveal of how that came about to happen. He's in prison, and he, when Sid 6.7 gets out, they decide that since they decide that he is the single best cop ever to walk the streets. Yeah. And also he's the person who got closest to catching Sid 6.7 in the simulations. So we should let him out and go on the street to track down Sid 6.7.
Yeah.
And I feel like every other bit of exposition and setup in this movie has given us the actual answer to how this is supposed to, how he gets let out. Like, why do they not have, hey, Parker, this is for you, and then be like, shit, he's going to keep killing, and all he wants is he wants to play with this cop. Well, we can use this cop as bait. Why is that not the plot of the movie?
Yeah, instead, it's about a virtual reality killer who all he wants in the whole world is to get out into the real world. And yet, every single time he sees a camera, he stares at it and frames himself in it like he's Max Goddamn Headroom. And it's like, you already had that. If all you wanted was to be on a screen, that was literally your life. You should really aim higher, considering you're a composite of hundreds of serial killers. And I absolutely agree with you. It would have made so much more sense that he was out there and suddenly mimicking this Grimes guy again, and you realize, oh, he just wants Parker.
And he's mimicking Grimes because he saw Denzel,
yeah.
And that memory gets triggered, and that's what happened. That's what would be interesting. And
this movie proves, in that flashback where Grimes kills Denzel's family, proves what I have always known since the beginning of time, that even with one arm, Denzel Washington can still kill every motherfucker in the room.
Oh, because also, by the way, Denzel Washington's a cyborg. Did we not mention that Denzel Washington is a cyborg in prison, that they gave him a strong metal arm after his arm got blown off, so that when he goes into prison, he has a nice big strong metal arm to beat people up with? Did we also mention that for some reason the cops really hate him for no apparent reason whatsoever and want him dead?
Yeah, let's talk about the fact that he's apparently in prison, in a shadow prison with all of the KKK members. For some reason, by the way, the guy who attacks him in prison, who is a member of, who is a white supremacist, dead ringer for the lead singer of Nickelback, and I couldn't figure out how I hated him more, as a white supremacist or as the lead singer from Nickelback, because there's just so much to dislike about that guy.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I would go with, you know, which is more popular in 2018,
Jesus Christ. I know the answer and I don't want to say it because it depresses me.
You don't like the answer.
There's not a good answer to that either way, but the actual answer is the most depressing. So moving on from there. But yeah, and I have to agree with you. Hilariously.
I love how that's breaking you now.
Hilariously, the thing that doesn't make sense about a virtual reality character brought into the real world is not the science of transubstantiation. It's the motivation. You could... okay, so when you're writing the script, the big hurdle should be, how do we make the science of this movie make even one goddamn iota of sense? And if we can do that, the motivation for this killer is easy. We got that handled. And somehow, they managed to put so much energy and swing really hard at the science and land on something that I could at least get behind. But you're right, the motivation is where they dropped the ball. Because apparently, the director of this movie, Mr. Leonard, has decided that it is way more important to focus on virtual reality, which in this future is very, very advanced. It is an advanced technology, but email is apparently dead and a thing no one uses anymore. Did you catch that line?
Well, no, it's not that they don't use it. He says that people used to sign their emails that way.
With the emoji.
With the smiley emoji.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, that's true.
So really, this movie underestimated the ubiquitousness of emojis. That's really the biggest anachronism of this
film.
That's
the thing, is the brilliant thing that Denzel Washington does to find Sid 6.7 is he recognizes an emoji.
Yep. That's it.
Because virtuosity.
Because virtuosity, folks. Because that is what it is. Yeah, but I just thought that was weird. That's like people used to sign their emails that way. So this is a future, of course, where they haven't figured out text messaging, but they've started signing emails with emojis, and virtual reality is not just a thing that you use.
Androids are a thing. Cell phones are not.
Androids are a thing. Denzel Washington being a cyborg is a thing, which actually I was reading Save the Cat, and there's a very popular concept of this second act cyborg reveal. So it makes sense that there would be a second act cyborg in Denzel Washington in this movie. That is a weird thing to find out. And then how he uses that! How he fucking uses that to save the day is so MacGyver and boss.
No, they actually tell you he's a cyborg at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, that's right. When he's being scanned.
Yeah, they're metal detected. Yeah, no, they tell you that he's a cyborg from the beginning, and it's like, wow, that's a weird choice.
When they're scanning him to go back into Attica, and with all the white supremacists, that's right, they do scan. But the guy who's scanning him seems to be surprised that he has a metal arm. It's like, didn't he just leave here? Aren't you guys hip to what's going on with Denzel? Come on. But none of that matters, because this is a great cat and mouse chase movie where two future Oscar winners are proving that they can literally do anything and come out smelling like a rose, because, oh my God, just so much insanity in this movie. I did want to talk about... So I mentioned that there was something I was going to talk about with Brett Leonard that would possibly make Scott Weinberg hate him more. So during my research for this movie, I happened to read the entirety of Brett Leonard's IMDb bio, and I would now like to take you to a live episode of Sock Puppet Biography, because if this fucking bio wasn't written by Brett Leonard himself, I will eat every microchip in this movie.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I know a lot of filmmakers that write their own bios and Wikipedia pages and things like that.
Do they use language like, first of all, dead giveaway? Mr. Leonard. Anytime a director is referred to as Mr. last name in the biography, it's probably written by that director. But this one just, oh my gosh. Mr. Leonard became a globally recognized pioneer of digital filmmaking when he directed and co-wrote the hit motion picture Lawnmower Man. I'm going to read that again. Globally recognized pioneer of digital filmmaking when he directed and co-wrote the hit motion picture Lawnmower Man. The film is considered a cult classic way ahead of its time in the use of groundbreaking computer graphics and the portrayal of a networked data culture. Is it any of those things? Am I missing something? Because Lawnmower Man is such a shit movie. Like, am I missing out on something here?
Lawnmower Man is kind of a delightfully shit movie.
Okay, fair enough.
Which is kind of like calling it a cult classic. I will give it that. You can give Lawnmower Man cult status. I don't remember it being a hit, but it may have been. It was a Stephen King movie after Stephen King movies weren't a thing anymore.
Yeah.
When they had really kind of dropped off and you'd only get the rare hit with something like a Misery or something of that nature.
Right.
This is the thing about him is his filmography, Virtuosity, is the best thing on it.
Entirely true. And he barely mentions it in the bio. He goes on and on and on about Lawnmower Man, but the only reason he mentions Virtuosity is to take credit for introducing American audiences to Russell Crowe. Quick reality check. This and Quick and the Dead came out in the same year. Quick and the Dead beat this to theaters by about 6 months.
And man, as much as Russell Crowe is fun in this movie,
He's so good in Quick and the Dead.
Although arguably nobody really saw Quick and the Dead when it came out. Like, that was an issue with Quick and the Dead, having seen it in a mostly empty theater right after release. It was not a huge hit. Although we will eventually do Take a Drink, Junkies. The fact that we haven't done Quick and the Dead is absurd, considering I love the fact that you could not remake Quick and the Dead today because you couldn't afford the cast.
This is very true, and we're saving that for Junk Food 6.7, so go ahead and write that one down, and you can commit some terabytes to it. We will definitely cover Quick and the Dead in Junk Food 6.7. By the way, did you happen to notice who the composer was on this movie?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like you would know.
Yeah, Christopher Young composed this, who, of course, I worked with on Sinister, and who, of course, did the Hellraiser scores, which are so fucking great, and did things like the early Spider-Man, you know, the first-generation Spider-Man movies. I love that we can say that. We're on a third-generation Spider-Man.
Isn't that fucking weird?
So, first-generation Spider-Man movies, he was doing score on. And he's fucking great. Like, I mean, and this score is cool. This score is playing around with industrial, which is really fun. Except, like, I'm sure he didn't have anything to do with it, but it's so weird. The very end of this movie, when we've got that helicopter tracking shot and this badass fucking 90s industrial, like grungy fucking guitar start
just shit rock.
Like
just
it's like rock. Fucking, well, no, first of all, I fucking dig the shit out of it. It's so good fuck for you. It's the music of clubs of that era, man. Like that I was just like, this is great. This is, and then there's like a record scratch, and all of a sudden it is this pop fucking song.
Peter Gabriel pops up
that never fucking got radio play. Like that's so not good.
That is only in the movie because Brett Leonard directed a goddamn Peter Gabriel video.
Speaking of which. Other great thing, and this is one of the things. Let us talk about Brett Leonard while we're kicking him in the nuts. I will give him credit.
Mr. Leonard, thank you very much.
Mr. Leonard did one other thing I really fucking like, and that is he did the Shock to the System music video. Billy Idol did this thing that 12 people love, and I'm one of the 12. Everyone else fucking hates it. It's notorious. Like, it was considered one of the worst albums of the 90s. But he did this cool as fuck thing where Billy Idol was like, electronic and industrial industrial is the wave of the future. And he was going to be the first rock musician to make an electronic record. And he was. And it was very, very, very inspired by William Gibson and specifically Neuromancer. In fact, one of the songs on the album is Neuromancer.
Wait a minute. Did we slip back into our Hackers episode?
No. Did I talk about it during the Hackers episode?
I feel like you didn't talk about Billy Idol, but we talked about how so much of that movie was also inspired by Neuromancer and William Gibson.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But so Billy Idol made this whole record that was about cyberpunk, and you could buy the digital edition of it that they only made 5,000 copies of that came with a disc that you could use on Macs. That had like lyrics and bonus materials, and no one had ever done that before. Like this was digital bonus materials. Like Billy Idol was really fucking ahead of his time, and he made a music video for that. And Mr. Leonard directed it, and it's actually a really cool fucking video. It's called and the song's called "A Shock to the System," and you could buy it at record stores, and motherfucking I bought that thing on VHS and I watched the shit out of that because it had that plus making of plus a couple extra things. It was like I remember buying it for like $8, and it's like it was really fucking cool. I was a big cyberpunk nerd at the time, and so for a major artist like Billy Idol to be zeroing in on this subgenre that I was infatuated with was awesome. But man, do people fucking hate that album. Rolling Stone listed it as like one of the 5 worst albums of the decade. And I think that's incredibly unfair. But I also understand that my taste in music can sometimes be borderline somewhere between shit and garbage. So hey, garbage, I'm not going to judge.
Hey, first of all, Garbage is a good band. Secondly, I've never heard Shit, but I'm sure that they've got their merits as well. I also think it's really hilarious that you're a big fan of Shock to the System, and we're talking about Virtuosity, because those two lanes of traffic at one point are going to start merging into each other.
Well, that's the thing, is when you look at Lawnmower Man, you look at Virtuosity, you look at Shock to the System, you can see that Leonard was obsessed with cyberpunk. And this movie is cyberpunk as hell. We've got a fucking ex-cop cyborg tracking down an android with an artificial intelligence fed with all the minds of serial killers.
Who's acting like the Joker and dressed like the Riddler.
And we keep running into, and there's, you know, nanotech put in his brain that can release a neurotoxin and kill him. And there's all these cyberpunk ideas that are literally just being thrown at the wall to see what sticks. And it becomes this delightful morass of just batshit insanity that for a cyberpunk fans, if you dig cyberpunk, Virtuosity is cyberpunk done right and wrong at the same fucking time.
Yeah. No, and now I'm just thinking about Russell Crowe as the Joker in The Dark Knight, because there's literally a scene in this movie where he's up on top of a car and Denzel's like driving at him in a vehicle, and he's up there doing the Heath Ledger just like, come on, hit me. And it's just like This is a fucking cartoon character brought into the real world. Never mind he's a composite of hundreds of different serial killers. He is a goddamn cartoon brought to life. Also, here's what I really love about this movie and about Russell Crowe in 1995. He is fresh to the shores of America. This is like uncharted territory
for him.
This is
fresh off Romper Stomper.
And yet, the minute he gets to the States, motherfucker is throwing his weight around. He says to the producers of this movie, I want my band on the soundtrack. 30-odd foot of grunt is going to do a song, not only on the soundtrack, but it will be featured in the movie. And they said yes. Oh, my. You want to talk about terrible albums?
Oh, well, yes. No, of all the things that can be said about Russell Crowe, the thing that is universally accepted is that 30-odd foot of grunts is unlistenable.
That, and he does not care for rotary phones. Those two things are universal. Look it up, folks, or ask your dads. Yeah, so it's amazing to me that on this soundtrack you have, like, this really shredding guitar, like, rock music. You have Peter Gabriel's soulful voice, and you have Russell Crowe apparently doing music with 30-odd foot of grunt. It is just the most bizarre mixture. And then you have, like, post-grunge bands like Live, and just this really weird. It's as schizophrenic as Sid 6.7 himself. It is just a really weird collection of music. And I think one of the legitimate surprises for me is as we get going and as Denzel is trying to track down Sid, and Sid's going to wrestling matches and randomly killing people on the street, literally like the Joker. It's just, hey, this will be fun. I'll throw you across the arena. Or, hey, this will be fun. I'll break your neck at the video. Like, he really is the Joker in that it's just so much about casual murder and the enjoyment he gets out of that. But throughout all of that, the biggest legitimate surprise is when he realizes that he's back in the virtual world, when he realizes that he's basically been duped and that now they've taken the fight back into virtual reality. And when we pull back and Denzel's just doing his suspended above the ground run, and we find this out because Denzel falls off a fucking building. He basically does a Nakatomi plunge and bounces right up off the, again, like the Matrix, and just bounces off the goddamn sidewalk. And it's like, oh, we're back in virtual reality, and Sid kind of loses his shit over that. I mean, if you can call it losing your shit, because he's kind of shitless throughout this whole movie. He has no shit left to lose. Yeah, it is absolutely fucking crazy how crazy this movie is.
Yeah, and that leads to my one real, real fucking flaw with this movie. Like, the one thing, like, I can enjoy every other element of this movie, and this is the one part where it's like, dude, really?
What, when they go back into virtual reality?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm fine with that part. It's how they get there to begin with. What's the one thing this motherfucker needs to regenerate and heal?
His weird matrixy thing in his head?
He needs... No, no, no. He needs glass.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He needs fucking glass, and he's got all these little tiny nanobots that eat all this glass to generate the materials that he needs to stay solid. What is he dying from? He falls through glass and he's got these huge planes of fucking glass sticking out of his goddamn chest. And it's supposed to be nanobots. It's not like some direct connect. Like, they're literally, the glass is right there. The nanobots should be devouring all that glass and turning it right into new flesh. Like, oh, wow, that didn't suck at all.
That would be
that,
like,
was fortuitous.
That would be like Jason Voorhees drowning in the blood of campers. It's like, no, 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 that's what fuels him.
Yes.
That is fucking, I cannot believe I didn't fucking
know. How many times have you watched this and that hasn't bugged you?
You know what? Let's not talk about how many times I've seen Virtuosity. Let's not admit to those numbers, but that never dawned on me. What did dawn on me is how blue, goopy blood comes out of Russell Crowe anytime he's, which, by the way, the IMDb trivial tried to make a connection where it's like, at one point he cuts his finger and drinks the blood and says, ooh, a very good year. Russell Crowe appeared in the movie A Good Year. Yeah, I don't think that was a preemptive reference to a movie no one remembers.
Wait, is that actually in the trivia?
Yes, it is literally in the trivia that is a thing. Also in the trivia, though, and I think this is pretty cool, is that We do, of course, get a reunion of Russell. We get a Virtuosity reunion courtesy of Tony Scott many years later in American Gangster. So,
oh, fuck yeah, we do.
Thank you, Tony Scott, for that. That is a piece of trivia. I was like, okay, that connection's great. The Goodyear one seems
I thought
like,
it was Ridley Scott that did.
Oh, you're right. It is Ridley Scott. Yeah, it's Ridley. It is Ridley Scott. I got confused because I keep going back and forth after our discussion of which Scott is the better filmmaker, because I think you could really make a case for either one. And
I still argue that Ridley has done the bigger, most epic genre defining movies, but Tony has the better batting average.
I agree. And I'm using the term batting average, despite the fact that one of his big misses is The Fan, but still the better batting average I feel goes to Tony Scott, especially after I finally saw Alien Covenant this weekend. So anyway, yeah.
Stargrove,
don't watch that. Another way he threw his weight around in this movie is that there is a scene where they're all talking about how Sid 6.7 is evolving. He's evolving. Evolving into what? And then the joke is it smash cuts to him walking down the street to Staying Alive by the Bee Gees.
Kind of fucking awesome.
So it turns out that getting that song, even in 1995, was not fucking cheap.
No. No, it had become a meme and was used multiple times. And at that point, when you're talking about this, that song had been out, what, 16, 17 years?
Yeah.
That's like getting Hey Ya, like right now.
One, two, three. And even though Paramount technically owned the rights to Saturday Night Fever, and even though Virtuosity is a Paramount release, it couldn't get the song wholesale. And one of the studio reps actually said, we had to pay the Bee Gees market value to get that song. And the only reason it's in there is because Russell Crowe said, I want to do this scene. I want to do the Saturday Night Fever walking down the street to that song. And they said yes.
Well, first of all, you keep being shocked as if Russell Crowe wasn't a big fucking deal when they brought him over here. Like, Romper Stomper fucked with people. Like, it was like, who the fuck is this? He was the new hotness, and everybody wanted a piece of Russell Crowe. And guess what? They were fucking right, because within 5 years of this, he had an Oscar.
True story.
Like, this is, and remember how big Russell Crowe was. That happened almost overnight. 95, genre nerds like me discovered who he was and said, oh shit, this guy's awesome. And then the video stores are like, yeah, you should check out his film from Australia, Romper Stomper. And they're like, holy fuck, this guy's amazing. And then within 2 years, he's doing much bigger stuff. Like, he became an A-lister almost overnight. He did his B movies right when he got here and then jumped into amazing stuff. Like, keep in mind, 4 years later from this, he was doing The Insider and was getting nominated for his first Academy Award. Like, the guy, everybody knew this guy was going to be a fucking star. And when you have somebody, especially in the 90s, who everybody is courting and everybody knows is going to be a star, you fucking give him his song. You talk about
you give him his 30 odd foot of grunt.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
fuck that means.
You know, they that's the thing, is like, market value for a song like that probably cost him like, what, at in the 90s, $50,000 to $100,000.
I'm glad you asked that, because I actually went so far as to reach out to PolyGram, who is now owned by Warner Brothers, to see if they could tell me how much it would cost today to license that song.
Whoa, You did research?
I fucking reached out to PolyGram, motherfucker. And as of this recording, they have still not responded. So I don't know what it would have cost, but I definitely found a channel where I could reach out to them directly.
Great story, bro.
I know, right? I was really hoping they would have responded.
I love the payoff for that.
I tried. I wanted, because I fucking care, I tried and I failed. But you know what doesn't fail is how great this movie fails.
This movie fails spectacularly in all the best ways. Like, this is, that's the thing, is no matter how stupid or batshit it gets, it really is entertaining every bit of the way. Everything that doesn't make sense is kind of fucking amazing, except for how, you know, Sid gets beat at the end. And yet at the same time, it's like, yeah, but that's not really how they beat him.
Look,
so,
Mr. Leonard can't be bothered with small details. He's busy telling you exactly how nanobots can convert glass into Russell Crowe's. So he's really just got a lot on his plate right now. Plus, Russell's making some really weird demands about his wardrobe. We just got a lot to deal with. I also, I wanted to just point out really quickly, because there was something really odd in the trivia that I wasn't really sure how to process. So apparently, yeah, I could watch this whole movie, but this is the part I can't process. Apparently, there was supposed to be, there's this love interest sort of between Denzel Washington and Kelly Lynch. And apparently there was supposed to be a kiss that Denzel nixed because he didn't feel that an interracial kiss was something that audiences would be okay with in 95. So it was actually Denzel who was like, no, I don't really think that's going to be appropriate. And I didn't really know how to process that. Like, is he right? Is it still weird that he would take that stance? Like, it was such an odd thing. Like, the rest of this movie seems so fearless in its bug nutsery that to actually be like, I don't know if audiences are going to get behind this, but we're totally going to get behind a serial killer composite coming into the real world via nanobots. So I don't know. How does that news strike you when you hear it?
I mean, it sounds very weird.
Yeah.
At the same time, they were in Los Angeles, you know, they're Hollywood, you know, making Hollywood movies. And this is in a very racially tense period of time. Keep in mind that, you know, this had to release in 95. It shot in 94, which is just 2 years after the riots. Mm-hmm. It's lots of crazy stuff was happening race-wise. And it's not like there hadn't been interracial kisses in films like this at that point. So it seems like a weird choice. It may have been knowing what I do about Denzel Washington, he is alpha as hell. And if what he wants, he gets his way. So maybe he didn't think it was an earned romance. Mm-hmm. And maybe he thought that it wasn't going to work. And so by giving that excuse, he knew that other people would back down. That would be an argument that you could back down from. That's a possibility. Or maybe he really was concerned with that. Maybe he was concerned with that at that time. Maybe it was one of the things that he didn't want that image. Like, he didn't want to be seen that way, that he wanted to be seen as, you know, very African-American and not, and nothing more. Like, I mean, that's a possibility as well. So it is a very weird choice for that time. Because at that point we were just a few years away from the first gay kiss on television. And so that was, we were coming close to breaking most of those barriers, and this barrier had already been broken. I mean, to say Stargrove, fucking, you know, almost 10 years before Never Too Young to Die had a really disturbing interracial love scene. So, I mean,
now it doesn't say, I didn't notice in the IMDb trivia whether an apple was going to be involved in the kiss between Denzel and Kelly Lynch, which, if Never Too Young to Die is to be taken as precedent, just makes it more awkward. But I do think it's interesting that in the same movie where Denzel has a problem with an interracial kiss, there's literally a scene from Star Trek that's played. A show that was made famous partially, like, or had a famous interracial kiss.
Yeah.
So that just is very, it's very unusual to me, but I there's probably a lot of factors that went into that, but it is just, it's really strange. Also strange, and a whole sub theory you could come up with about this movie is that the real serial killer in this movie is the guy that developed Sid 6.7. Because they go to him at one point, and he's staying in this like flea bag motel, and he has also written Death to Pigs.
Well, he's trying to
on the wall.
There's some weird plot of his that clearly got cut because he's trying to track Sid as well. And I don't understand his motivation. Why? Like, his motivation just doesn't make any sense in this movie. And I feel like we're missing. That's part of the reams of what got cut is the explanation for him. And what he's doing and why he's doing it.
He's basically John Lithgow's lackey from Ricochet throughout this whole movie.
Yeah, he comes across that way, but that's not what he's supposed to be.
He engineers his escape, and then he roots for him from the sidelines. I mean, it's very much that character. But you're right. At the same time, it's like, what is your end game here? What are you hoping to get out of this? Oh, wait, you know what? I don't care because Denzel and Russell are back on screen and they can do whatever the fuck they want and I'm going to stay glued to that screen.
Yeah, you know, you got me thinking. I'm trying to think of the Arnold Schwarzenegger version of this movie now. I mean, I already know what the big quip is. you know, the big final hit at the end, you know, where he hits him and he goes, you know what your problem is, Sid? You've got the glass jaw.
Nice. I like that.
And then he goes over and boom. And that's, you know, that's the Arnold movie. But how, what other kind of quips would Arnold have snuck in?
You've been deleted. Bam. Or control, alt, delete. Boom. Yeah, no, there's, oh my God, you could play with that so many different ways with VR. By the way, that whole scene where Denzel's running suspended in the air in that VR rig, guess who's not fitting in that fucking VR rig being suspended from the air? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You come from virtual reality. Welcome to my reality.
Welcome to my reality. That's it. That's the one. That is absolutely the one. Welcome to my reality. He's made of computers. I don't understand. Schwarzenegger strikes me as the kind of guy who has maybe used a computer once. And it's like by the time he got to a place where he probably needed every day for work, like in his political career, he already had people to do that shit for him. I would bet so much money Arnold Schwarzenegger has never actually owned or touched a computer in his entire life.
Actually, he Reddits all the time. Yeah.
Does he?
Yeah, he does.
Or does somebody else Reddit for him? Reddit to him? Reddit? I don't know. He's the Redditor.
He is. If it upvotes, we can kill it.
Shut up. Ask me anything. Come on, do it.
He's actually, you know, say what you will, he is amazing on Reddit. Like, I know. You know what? We can make fun of a lot of stuff with Schwarzenegger, but when he gets online, he's nothing but positive.
I'm sure he is.
Like, when people troll him, he actually knows how to destroy trolls by making the internet mock the person while also making that person feel like 6 inches tall and also giving them a big hug and going, I know you're better than this and you can be a better human being and you should come and join the rest of us. Like he has this, Arnold Schwarzenegger on the internet is like your disappointed father. And you just feel so bad when you have disappointed the Arnold. But yeah, no, you find him in all sorts of like physical fitness subreddits and things and saying you can do it and keep going and hey, that's great and giving support to people who have just started. And like he's online, he's a real fucking mensch.
I'm just saying
there's plenty of other things that can be said about Arnold, but I will give him the credit that when he's on a computer, he's actually a good human.
And the sequel, of course, Subredditor. I can't wait to see these movies. We've got to make them happen.
Game over.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing.
Ken Shamrock Shake! Ken Shamrock Shake!
It is not a Ken Shamrock Shake, much as I would enjoy that.
God damn it!
The junk food pairing is, in fact, New Coke. Like the makers of Virtuosity, in the mid-80s, Coca-Cola unwisely mortgaged its future with a failed prediction on what the world would want when they released New Coke. And in order to compete with their arch rival Pepsi, Coke sought to capture a younger target audience and opted for a digitally constructed and notoriously off-putting spokes character, Max Headroom, who we've already mentioned at points in this movie. Russell Crowe is straight up just doing a Max Headroom impression.
Catch the wave, Coke!
What does he say in this movie? And you could imagine him saying this quote in Max Headroom's voice. I'm a 50 terabyte self-evolving neural network double backflip off the high dive. I'm not a swan dive.
I will also back you up on this.
Oh my God. Mark it down in the calendar, folks.
Here's why I'm going to back you up on this. Despite my severe Arnold-like disappointment in the fact that it's not a Ken Shamrock Shake, what does the bartender android make him?
Is it rum and coke?
It's a rum and coke.
It is a rum and coke.
He makes a rum and new coke. So I will, I'll pull out Judge Mills Lane, who says, I'll allow it.
Ask your parents. I am so happy that we get to talk about Virtuosity on Junk Food Cinema. Like
going to go and make a recipe for a Ken Shamrock Shake. I want to know what that fucking tastes like.
It tastes like a Shamrock Shake, but sweatier. So enjoy that, Cargill. I feel like you'll definitely get your money's worth. Speaking of you, Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Massawyrm. That's MassaWyrm. And it looks like you'll find me at the Chattanooga Film Festival.
Pardon me, boy? Is that the Chattanooga Film Fest?
Yes. And I'll be at the Chattanooga Film Festival this year for the whole thing. There's some really great, fun, crazy surprises, including what Scott Derrickson refers to as the most Cargill shit ever. So
I don't want to know what that is.
You do. And so I'm going to be there. I know we've got a bunch of you listeners out in Chattanooga or that go to Chattanooga. Some of you talked to me last year. I can't wait to talk to you this year. Grab me, while, I'm walking past and we'll shoot the shit. We'll Stargrove. So, nice. Yeah, that's where you guys can find me.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at Bryguy Salisbury. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/Brian Salisbury Critic. I almost forgot my own handle there for a second. You can once again find this show at Junk Food Cinema, facebook.com/Junk Food Cinema. And if you really like the show, if you like it more than I like the idea of Arnold Schwarzenegger becoming the Redditor, you can go to patreon.com/Junk Food Cinema and pledge to keep this show afloat for years to come. Not unlike, again, I just come back to this virtual reality and how much they probably spent on it as a training methodology, even though it really doesn't adequately prepare police to take down serial killers. In fact, I feel like current virtual, slight sidebar before we wrap things up, I feel like current virtual reality, which is mostly just used for gaming culture, would be a better training source for cops taking down serial killers. Like all those like escape the room games in virtual reality. That seems more apt for training detectives on how to take down serial killers than the virtual reality presented in this movie. So maybe we have actually arrived at the future that was predicted by Virtuosity, and I just made myself very scared. I'm a little afraid. So I'm gonna go ahead and wrap up the show by letting you know that this one was for you, Parker.
You know, most love songs do become better if you swap out love for lunch. Like if you
really?
Throw lunch in there. Yeah.
Okay. Now I have to come up with an example.
I need some lunch like I've never needed lunch before. I'm
gonna make lunch
for you, baby. I had a little lunch. Now I'm back for more. Wanna make lunch for you, baby.
Baby lunch, my baby lunch. Yeah. It's mostly peas and then some squash. Because that's what babies eat for lunch.
That they do.
Whew, man. I'm glad this is not the show. It's just us doing this for an hour, but go ahead and get started. let me backtrack. I kind of wish this was the show, just us doing this for an hour, but...